Welcome to ALSB's Pedagogy Podcast. I'm Eric Sater of Indiana University's Kelly School of Business. Join me as we hear from Academy of Legal Studies and Business teachers and scholars as to tips, tricks, and lessons learned in the classroom and beyond. ALSB focuses on the fields of business law, legal environment, and law-related courses outside of professional law schools. This cast is hosted by ALSB's Teaching and Pedagogy section. As part of the Teaching and Pedagogy podcast, we'll be taking a specific look at ALSB's Master Teacher Competition Series. Both past competitors and winners will share their expertise as we spotlight their contributions at the time of competition, plus have a dialogue on how these contributions have been leveraged by others and or improved over time. Today's episode features ALSB's own Mike Koval as he presents his Syllabus Day alternative.
Good afternoon, everyone. I am super pleased to have with us our very first Master Teacher winner and finalist, and it is Mike Koval, who is an associate professor at the Franklin P. Perdue School of Business out of Salisbury, Maryland. He's also the faculty director of their Business Honors Program and has an extensive record on pedagogy. So Mike, thanks for joining us. Again, as I just told you a few minutes ago, you are our first master teacher we're gonna have on these episodes. So I'm sure everyone will treat us with grace having that in mind. Speaking of first, your presentation, the one you chose to send me, and I had an opportunity to look at some of these materials, is about the first day of class and how to introduce that. And you called it Bistro 24, it looks like. So I'm just going to turn it over to you for a little bit to introduce. There's all sorts of things. I'll just let you run with it, and I'll interrupt you, and we'll go from there.
Okay, thanks, Eric. And thank you so much for inviting me, and thank you for providing this service to the Academy. I think it's really a great idea. So Bistro 24 was an activity that I put together, I think my second year of teaching legal environment. I began teaching at Salisbury University as an adjunct in 2006. By 2008, I was on the tenure track in the accounting and law department and started teaching legal environment. So after the first year, I was getting ready to start classes fall semester. This would have been 2009. And if you recall back then, there was a popular television show called 24, right? That was Jack Bauer and the counterterrorism unit. And the conceit of the show was, each episode was an hour in a 24-hour day. So it was on Sunday nights. I taught on Monday mornings. And as I was watching the show, you know, I was also thinking about, oh, the first day of class is tomorrow. And are we just going to go through the syllabus, talk about the expectations? And I was in the back of my mind thinking, what else can I do to make this more interesting, more exciting? And as I'm watching the show, it hits me. It's like, hey, I can use this. Right. So it was one of those aha moments. And I don't know if you experience these, but sometimes you just have an idea that hits you out of the blue and you just run with it. And it's kind of fully formed right there in the moment. So I still remember very clearly the show was on from 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock in the evening. After the show was over, I ran upstairs to my computer and I literally put this activity together in an hour and a half to prepare for the class that started the next day. So my idea was, how can I preview the course content in a way that's not intimidating, that doesn't require students to prepare anything, but that's going to get them excited and, you know, get them talking and engaged and knowing each other and understanding my expectations. So I went to my computer and I said, okay, 24 hours, that's a little bit long. Let's just say we're gonna work at a restaurant from 8 o'clock until midnight.
Sure.
And for each hour, like in the show, something bad happened. right? So I kind of started it with the tagline of the show was, and this is the worst day of his life. So the activity, I said, you know, you work at a restaurant or you're the owner manager of a restaurant, and this was the worst day of your professional life. Here's what happened. And then at each hour, I went down the list and some legal issue, right, that we will be talking about in class throughout the course, throughout the semester, something happened, right? You accidentally poisoned a guest. You found out that your advertisement in the newspaper was misprinted. You had employee issues, you had to fire people. You found out that you're being sued for racial discrimination, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I kind of got my syllabus out, looked at all the things we were going to be talking about, and just made up these very simple, very short scenarios. One or two sentences. This is what happened at 8 o'clock. This is what happened at 9 o'clock. And I put them together and ended up at midnight, right? So then I'm like, Okay, now, so I have this idea. Now, how am I going to implement it into the classroom? And the thought was, okay, small groups, just get them talking. And how do you do that without them being afraid? Rank the scenarios. And that was the key, right? As soon as I told them to rank these scenarios from most problematic to least problematic, they just go, they're all over it.
Right.
They just jump right in. Like they don't even know what they're measuring or what they're ranking, but they just want to show like, hey, this is worse than this. And here's why I think. And they start talking and it worked really well. So put together the day, the worst day in your life. And then at the end of the time period, call them back together and say, okay, give me your list. What are the top five problems or the most important problems that occurred during this day? So usually what I do is I'll tell them at the beginning, I will call one group to come up and present. You know, we'll be the lawyers coming down from Wilmington and you present to us in order the issues that you think would be most problematic for the restaurant.
Sure. So Mike, can you give us a little bit, as we go into this more course context in terms of the average class size you have in here and maybe the group sizes that you do these breakouts for?
Sure. So when I first put the activity together, the class sizes were generally a section of legal environment is usually capped at about 36 students.
Oh, okay, great.
We're fortunate to, we had just built a new building and the classroom by fire code, the classrooms are capped at a pretty small number.
So, oh, great.
So 36, and 36 is a great number because it's easily divisible by 3 and 4. And so you can do all kinds of things. But right. I guess by most standards, that's a pretty small class. And then I would break the students up into maybe about 10 groups total, depending on who was there that day. They would start talking right away. I'd sort of circulate and call timeouts and say, what are you really measuring here? This is a business law or a legal environment course. So we're talking about legal liability. All of these are going to cause you business issues as well. Yeah. So we talk about separating the legal liability from just something bad that happened to the business. And it kind of turns into a conversation. So process would be about 36 students, but I have used it in a double section, a large auditorium with 72 sure. students as well. And I'll admit that what I do in that section while they're all discussing the issues is I get my seating chart done on the, on my on Canvas. So I'm multitasking at the same time, but it works just as well. Even in a large class of 72, the students just, the activity, and I can't claim that I expected it or that I designed it this way, but it sort of takes on a life of its own. And it really just makes you so happy to think, oh, wow, this is going to be a great semester. These guys are really into it. And in fact, I remember one semester, I even had students shake my hand as they left the classroom. And that had never happened before, but they were just so engaged, and they wanted to find out more. So at the end, I don't know if I talked about sort of the, after they decide and they make their presentation, mm-hmm. I sort of play devil's advocate, right? And my whole point here is, look, just from being an American, growing up in the United States, you guys kind of know what the answers are. You have no idea why, right? You're not at the point yet where you can explain the legal underpinnings of how you reach these conclusions. But you kind of know, you feel it in your gut that the restaurant should be liable for the food poisoning, even if they didn't do anything wrong, even if it wasn't their fault that the food was spoiled. So I try to show them that they should trust their instincts. And then what we're going to do in class is we're going to sort of tease out those instincts and rebuild the arguments with the legal principles that all business owners should find valuable.
Mike, I apologize if I missed this part. I know you said you had taught for a few years prior as an adjunct to your current role. Mm-hmm. Was this Yes. particular course in Bistro 24, is this the first time you taught the course to use this activity, or did you use a more traditional approach?
Yes. So I spent 2 years as an adjunct actually in the management and marketing department. So those were completely different courses or classes. I hadn't taught those at all. When I began in the legal at SU, it's a Department of Accounting and Legal Studies.
Okay.
And I am the legal studies part of that department. I'm the only law professor in my department. We don't have a law degree or we don't have a law minor. It's purely a service course, right, for the other majors. So sure. I didn't have anyone to talk to or bounce ideas off of. I was kind of jumping into academia, kind of at a late part in my career, without knowing anything about what I was doing. The first year I taught legal environment and business law, I didn't have this activity. It was that would have been 2008. Fall of 2009 is when I had this idea to use this for my first day of class.
Well, I admit going through this, I really like it. So one, do you mind if other folks kind of piggyback on it? And beyond that, have you heard any stories from people who have implemented something like this and what their takeaways have been?
Yes. So there were lots of questions there. I'll try to answer them all one at a time. So can I kind of get personal about my career and
sure, let's
talk
do it.
About how this activity basically saved my academic career?
All right. I'm interested.
Okay. I believe me, this will tie into your questions eventually. I got my appointment for tenure track. I'm a lawyer. I worked in law firms. I had never been in academia. And I think for a lot of us, moving from the private sector into academia is a very strange experience, right? We don't quite understand shared governance. We don't quite understand the politics and how faculty works. And it's very strange. And as I said, I was the only legal studies professor. So I didn't have anyone else to kind of show me the ropes or tell me what I should or should not be doing. So research? I don't know anything about research except to prepare a case, right? I don't know how to publish law articles. And even if I did, I didn't know if I was good enough to be able to do it. So at my 3-year kind of, are you allowed to stay or are you going to be going? My department chair and my dean are like, look, you're halfway to tenure or to the tenure decision and you haven't published anything. And I'm like, oh yeah, but I'm a really great teacher. And they're like, oh yeah, that's nice. But you know, I had spent all my time, all my effort learning how to teach because you know, we're not taught that either, right? So at that point, I'm like, okay, well then I better get serious about figuring out what business law publishing is about.
Sure.
I hadn't even heard of ALSB. I didn't know about the academies. I did nothing. I was just kind of doing my own thing. So I started, got on the internet, started doing the searches, quickly found ALSB, found all the journals, said, okay, what am I gonna write about? And this was an activity that I had such success with in the classroom that it seemed like, okay, I can put an article together about this. So I put an article together and it was terrible. I didn't do the proper research about what should an article look like and what types of blue book. It was a mess. Like when I go back and look at it, it's embarrassing. But I sent it in anyway. I sent it to the Journal of Legal Studies Education, right, JLSE. And I got this nice reply from Tanya Murphy, who was the editor at the time. God bless her. She saved my career. She said, you know, I didn't know anybody in the academy. I'm this new entity that no one's ever heard of. So she sent me back a note saying, you know, I got this article. It's really not publishable, but have you ever heard about the master teacher competition? I'm like, no. She said, have you ever come to one of our conferences? I said, no. She said, well, every year at the National Academy, we have this Charles M. Hewitt master teacher competition. And this seems like it would be a really strong proposal if you wanted to apply for the competition. The timing just worked out that she was able, you know, that I could take what she said, prepare my proposal and submit it for the next year. So that's what I did. And they liked it, right? They accepted it as one of the four finalists. And to this day, every time I see Tanya, I say, you saved my career, Tanya. I love you so much. Thank you, thank you, thank you. She's like, no, I did not. But literally, this competition and the academy allowed me to continue to be in academia because I was able to present the activity at it was 2012 competition in Kansas City.
Okay.
So here's this guy coming in that nobody has ever heard of, nobody knows, nobody, like I was a complete stranger. I'd never been involved in any of the regional or the national organizations at all. And if I had known what I was getting myself into, I would have been a lot more nervous than I was, but I'm the kind of person that I don't do a lot of prep. I kind of just jump in and sure. Hope that things work out for the best. So I didn't even think to ask, well, you know, how big is this? How many people? What's it going to look like? I didn't do any of that. So I walked into the conference room and it was this enormous ballroom with 200 people set up in chairs and the stage up at the front. I'll try to watch my language here, but I'm like, oh my gosh.
Right.
So if I had known, I think if I had known ahead of time what a big deal this was, I would have been much more nervous and probably wouldn't have performed as well as I did.
And you did, though, it looks like, subsequently get something published. So I know your round one article didn't, but it looks like spring 2013, you'll have to eventually get to how that happened, I suppose.
Exactly. I did, because one of the perks of winning the competition is the journal really bends over backwards to help you kind of get this into a publishable form.
Oh, great.
So yeah, I joke that it's easier for me to win a competition to get published than it is to actually just write a paper. But my point was, the people that I met at the conference that year were so generous and so willing to help. And like when I explained my situation to people, I came away with contacts for a dozen, two dozen people, like, call me, tell me what I can, how I can help you. They were so, it was like I found this long lost family that I didn't even know existed. I just came away from that conference with such warm fuzzies. and it's been an important part of my career ever since.
Well, Mike, you are helping alleviate concerns I have. I have not entered a master teacher competition, but you're making it seem, I don't know, part scary, but partly welcoming and affirming and a good experience. Yes. So I hope others like myself are giving it some consideration.
I would highly recommend it. Yes.
Good. And subsequent, maybe you can talk about developments. Have you, I know you've improved and updated this some. Have you competed with it again or just made updates, or what's happened from there, I guess, from the early stages?
Yes, sure. So after the competition that first time, I had dozens of people come up to me saying, that is such a wonderful idea.
Yeah.
And I can't remember all the names because I didn't know them at the time and there were so many people, but I remember one guy in the elevator, he said, thanks a lot, Koval. I'm like, what?
Yeah, uh-huh.
and he said, now I have to revise my first day of class so that I can incorporate this activity.
Yep.
And I think the characteristic that really allowed people to use it is, it was like a gift. Like, this is it. There's no prep. You don't have to have the students do anything. It's just a one class period. So it's not, some activities, they get complicated, right? Or they take too much time. And while everyone says, oh yeah, that's a great idea, but I don't think I can do it because it doesn't work in my class. This is a one-time thing that you can pick out and use. And it's very little time or resources on the part of the instructor. So I had lots of people come up to me at the conference, introduce themselves, tell me how much they enjoyed it. And then for a whole 2 years, I would get emails, thank you notes, just from people that I didn't really know, but they would say, hey, I wanted to share this with you. I took it, I changed it a little bit because I cover intellectual property or I cover business organizations, but the idea is the same. Tanya Murphy said, well, I changed it so that it's a local hangout at Notre Dame. So all the kids know, what the restaurant is. So everyone kind of can put their own stamp on it and adapt it to their own situation. And it still gets that same energy going for their students. And then the last point I'll make is about, I can't remember exactly what year it was, maybe 2018. Like, people still talk about Bistro 24 at the conference. And I still have people come up and say, oh yeah, you're the Bistro 24 guy. And I make the joke that I'm the Starland vocal band of the Academy. I don't know, you might be too young to know who they are, but they were like a one hit wonder band.
Sure,
they had Afternoon Delight, and then nobody ever heard of them again.
Yep.
That's kind of me with Bistro 24. But Charles Thomas from California arranged a panel that we called Jack is Back, adaptations and changes to Bistro 24. So we had a panel discussion of four different instructors who had used it, changed it, adapted it, critiqued it. So yeah, that's kind of, that was sort of the only other time that it was, you know, on display at the conference itself.
And you mentioned the time being pretty reasonable for this activity, both for prep and for implementation. Just for context, do you have hour and a half long blocks somewhere in that ballpark, or how much time to implement does this take?
I've done it in 50 minute classes and 75 minute class periods. Okay. 75 minutes is much better.
Sure.
So generally for a 75 minute class period, you know, there'll be 5 minutes kind of talking about, you know, giving the setup and passing out the memos. And I usually have a paper copy that I give to everyone, even if they can access it online, because they can write on it. And I just feel like it gets people talking to each other a little bit more. Then they'll take 5 minutes just to silently read through it individually. And then they start talking in the groups. That usually goes on for about 25 or 30 minutes. Some group, you know, you always have the group that says, yeah, we're done, we finished. But for the most part, about 25, 30 minutes. And sometimes I'll add extra tasks for them just for those groups that think they're finished, even though we don't really talk about those tasks later on. And then the real fun then is the discussion afterward, right? So they've all ranked, generally the top 5, 6 are pretty common among the groups. So I'll have one group come up and make their presentation, and then we just kind of go down the list and talk about the legal issues to come. You know, well, what if the facts were different? What if this happened instead of that happened? Why do you think we should be liable for the food poisoning? Those kind of things. And everybody sort of gets into it. I think for a lot of my students in legal environment, right, these are mostly freshmen and sophomores, they haven't really been asked to think this way, the way that lawyers think, right, in kind of a legal analysis. Well, what is the rule? And how do we apply it? And what if the facts are different? So they usually take to it very, 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 very well. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, no, you're doing great, okay. Mike. I think we've answered questions I've yet to ask. So
good.
I think we're on a good track. But I'm looking at some of Mike's slides here and some of the common ranked events where death by brownie looks like it might be up on the hit list a lot of times.
Yes.
Texting
yes.
delivery boy, one for the road. Yeah, race discrimination, slip and falls. So yeah, an interesting spectrum of choices, it seems.
Yes.
You spoke to the ranking, and I agree with this being a safe, fun way for involvement. I thought in some of your materials I saw, do you have your students try to guess the area of law, and do they know law enough to do that? Or maybe you can speak to some of the additional components.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I've kind of phased out.
Okay.
As I've evolved the activity. My initial thought was, you know, still thinking about the syllabus that very first time, what I would do before this activity is, you know, put up the schedule.
Yeah.
Here's the topics. We're going to talk about civil procedure. We're going to talk about contracts. We're going to talk about employment law. We're going to talk about torts. We're going to talk about con law. So the idea when I wrote the article and presented it initially was to sort of have a big chart on the board, and as they talked about the area of law, you know, I would kind of fill in the syllabus. But you're right, your instincts are correct. They didn't really. I was pulling the information out of them, and it didn't. I found that while it worked okay, it kind of brought the energy down a little bit, and that's not what I wanted to do. So in my later iterations of the activity, I don't really talk much about the source of law or the area of law.
And I got a couple other questions for you. How about your other classes? Have you decided to, I don't know what all you teach beyond this, but have you decided to implement a similar day one activity for other coursework you've taught?
Yeah, so For better or for worse, being the only legal studies professor at Salisbury University,
yeah,
we only have two business law courses.
Sure.
We have legal environment, which is what we call a pre-professional core course that all business students must take to get into the upper division. And then we have the business law course, which is required for accounting majors. Kind of started as a CPA prep course. It's evolved a lot since then, but it fulfills a required course for accounting majors. And then it's also an elective for finance majors or an accounting minor. So those are the only two courses that I teach. I do use an introductory activity in my upper level business law course, but frankly, the thing that makes this work for legal environment is this, like I said earlier, the students already kind of have an intuition about it, right? Accounting students don't really have, none of us have an intuition about secured transactions or bankruptcy or, you know, so the issues in my upper level course are much more technical, more black letter law. It's been hard to have this type of project with that, but I do different things with them. Basically, the first area I cover in that course is choice of entity, business organizations. So we do what are the advantages and disadvantages of sole proprietorship, partnership, LLCs, based on a scenario kind of similar to this. So it's not quite as thrill-inducing as 24, but I've had to do other things.
Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just going to ask the aging of pop culture with 24. So I feel like you could keep doing this, even if you didn't know what it was, but just curious if your students
there. They have no idea.
Okay.
Maybe they don't know anymore. In fact, the name doesn't mean anything to them. They just think, oh, that must be the street address that the restaurant is on. For a while, I would explain to them at the beginning, and then I'm like, it doesn't matter. They don't need to know. They're not going to go back and pull up old videos of the show. So while the pop culture was sort of the impetus for me, it's really not necessary in order for the value of the activity to really shine through.
Speaking
of pop culture, and I don't even know if you would recognize these people, but when I transferred all my courses online for the pandemic, I spent hundreds of hours doing it. But one of my activities was based on 60s television sitcoms.
Okay.
And I put up a picture of, do you remember the show Green Acres?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I know it.
Zsa Gabor, the rich New York socialite, and Eddie Albert. I put up a picture of them in their, their Green Acres costumes. Nothing, crickets, like nobody had any clue. I'm like, you don't recognize either of these people or what this might be? They just looked at me blankly. And I'm like, it was a sitcom from the 60s. And they're like, the 60s? That was like 60 years ago. How would we know what that is? And they were right. But for us old guys, it's surprising that our cultural touchstones are not only no longer relevant, but no longer even recognizable to today's students.
Well, I've got a couple high school exchange students who live with us, and we recently played this game where they were asked, what historical period would you most want to live in? And one of them was the 1990s. So there you go.
Can I just say that I missed the entire 90s? Like, I don't know what happened, but I have no memories of the 90s. Law school and children, I guess. Yes.
Well, we may have tangented too far. I know at one point I interrupted you. You were going to talk about a different activity or something you had maybe tried in a different class. Do you remember that thought? If not, we can go to a new one.
Yes. In fact, my next project, and you know how that goes.
Yep.
One of the things that I did during the pandemic, I taught in the first year, 20, So fall 2020, spring 2021, I taught my courses hybrid. I was able to secure the large auditorium in our building so I could have my full 36 students, but they were spread out, socially distanced, because it's all a blur, I think, for most of us now. But if you remember that first year, everyone had to be 6 feet apart, and people were splitting their classes into two. And so I was able to have everybody together, and we only met once a week. So I put everything online. They would have to supposedly do the work on their own during the week. And then on Monday we would meet, and I would have activities, problems set up for them to work on. And then they'd have to do a writing assignment, solving the problem for a grade. So I kind of flipped the group project. Traditionally, my experience with group projects are, you give a group a project, they immediately tear it into four pieces.
Right.
You do this, you do that. They all go do their thing. They come back together. Somebody slaps it together and they submit it. What I did during the pandemic that worked pretty well was we did the projects in class. They're working together in class to solve the problem, but then they would have to go back and write it up individually. So they would each have to submit their memo.
Sure.
The problem that worked really well. But two of the problems or activities that I put together, I'm really proud of. One is a bankruptcy problem, and one is a wills and estates problem. And so this was for my business law, my upper level course, not legal environment. And I want to get those out there. I just have to manage my time and get it done. So that's my next
project. We'll welcome you back after your next award and article. So looking forward to it. I got at least two more questions. We'll see if I think of others on them.
All right.
One was, so this is day one, but do you bring back this activity anytime as you enter these different chapters and contexts? You say, oh, do you remember what happened with the brownie or whatever the situation was?
Absolutely. Yes. In fact, what I've done is I've snipped the pieces from the memo, from the document, slapped them up on a PowerPoint. And then when we are doing contracts or agency law, especially, with the driver and the negligence, does the negligence flow through the strict liability with the brownie dessert? I put it up there. I'm like, remember this? And they're like, oh yeah, I remember this. So yes, this is a great launching pad for discussions. And they generally do remember it, right? Because they were so engaged on that first day. They're like, yes, we do remember that. I'm like, well, remember you said this was the answer? And I told you, well, you're right. And I'm going to tell you why when we get to it. Well, now I'm going to tell you why. And then we talk about scope of employment or work time related workspace or whatever the motivation tests are. That's what we talk about. So yes, absolutely.
Great. And this does seem to hit the primary objectives of what do you want to happen on day one, but some of the little housekeeping things, how do you still communicate those? Do you still squeeze them in that day or make sure they're online or what additional steps may you have to take?
Yeah, I've tried a few things because as you know, students have certain expectations when they come to class the first day.
Yeah.
And you can shake them up somewhat, but you can't completely turn them upside down. You still have to meet those basic, what do I need to do? When do I need to do it? How am I going to be graded? Right. That's basically what they want to know. And that's why I said this works a lot better in a 75 minute period, because you can finish it up pretty well in an hour and 5 minutes. And then spend those last 10 minutes going over the big meaty process issues. I think, now with learning management systems, and we use Canvas at Salisbury, there's an expectation that, and kind of a joke and a meme also, right? That students they never read the syllabus. They're never gonna. I don't think that's really true. I think that if you put everything out there, you give them enough encouragement, some of my colleagues use syllabus quizzes and things like that. You know, there's ways to get them to read through it, but I still think there's value and they expect you to talk to them about what it is you're going to be looking for and measuring and how you're going to be measuring it. So generally I'll finish this up. We'll have 10 minutes left. I'll go through the grading and the requirements and the exams. And then at the beginning of the next class, I'll just open it up with, okay, so this is how you're going to be graded. Are there any questions? Is there anything unclear about how this, you know, how you're expected to perform in this class? So that's how I've managed that issue.
Well, Mike, I think you've hit all my primary questions. As I explained to you, I'll make sure your contact information, as well as your citation to your article, is publicly accessible for folks who access the CAST. But were there other things that you for sure wanted to hit on today or explain regarding the Bistro 24 or teaching more generally?
Well, I guess I would say, as I was thinking about this interview and going back through, you know, it's always interesting to go back to something that you did almost 10 years ago.
Yep.
And there's a lot of things jump out at you, like, really? Why did I do that? Or that's not a very good idea. And I think, just sort of as a concluding remarks, and I'm sure I'm not the only one that's been grappling with these issues, but with the pandemic, the stress and the, you know, the mental health issues that a lot of our students are going through, the racial reckoning that we've gone through over the last couple years, finally the recognition that diversity, equity, and inclusion needs to be something that we work at and not simply expect to happen. Those are kind of the issues now that I'm looking at my old work, you know, through that lens. And my goal for the next couple of years, I think, is to intentionally look at, look at what are we teaching? Why are we teaching it? Are we teaching it through, you know, blind spots that we don't even realize? Are we putting up process barriers to students who have issues that we don't even understand, right? We expect students to do certain things. Example, I was adamant, phones away, laptops away, take out your paper, we're gonna talk. I don't do that anymore. You wanna use your laptop, use your laptop. You need your phone, use your phone. I'm embarrassed now that I had all of these rules simply for the sake of having the rules, right? Of showing that I was the one who was the authority figure in charge. More tests, right?
Yep.
With lower stakes, more writing assignments, more ways for them to show me that I understand this material, right? Maybe they are really bad at taking a multiple choice test. And when I first started teaching, that's all I did. You know, right. Four tests and we're done. Now, you know, tests are, they're down to almost 30% of my total grade. So, you know, I think those are the issues that, and I don't think I'm telling anyone who's been teaching the last couple of years anything new, but that's sort of where I'm focusing my teaching energy right now is to those types of issues.
So great ideas for future discussion. So looking forward to more of these talks. Also, absolutely. I just enjoy, frankly, meeting people through this forum. So thank you very much, Mike, for, I don't know if we've been in the same conference room together or not, but I know we haven't had an extended conversation like this, if nothing else. So thanks, Mike.
Yes, Eric, thank you so much. I'm really pleased to chat with you, and good luck with the rest of the interviews and this project.
You got it. Again, this was Mike Koble out of the Franklin P. Purdue School of Business being with us on Bistro 24, his Master Teacher Competition. Great work. So thanks so much, Mike. We'll catch you around.
All right. Thanks, Eric.
That's all for this afternoon. Many thanks again to Mike Koval on his explanation of Bistro 24, a first day class activity. If you have a teaching or pedagogy contribution you'd like to share, please reach out to me, Eric Sater, at easater@iu.edu. That's E as in Eric, A as in Alan, S as in Sam, A, D as in dog, E, R as in Rick, @iu.edu. We're excited to hear more from our colleagues in 2022. Potential ideas received so far include lessons learned from pandemic teaching and open access materials. This has been another episode of ALSB's Pedagogy Podcast. Stay tuned and stay safe.